This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons, it's 3 o'clock in our Brighton studios, powered by Verizon. And that means happy shirt, flower print, Ted Johnson's in the house.
It's right? It's a good day to be on radio, boys.
Oh, it is.
I came in. I'm high-fiving
everybody. Teddy Christmas, Teddy ball game.
There's just
Merry
so much
Christmas,
Fitzy,
Ted,
to talk about, you know, besides just the Bill Belichick story. Lots to get into today and in this week. So I'm still riding high, still kind of feeling good about our trip out in Green Bay. And so this is a nice little entry back into normalcy with today's sporting news today. Wow.
Did you work off all the burgers that you blamed on me?
I'm working on it, buddy. Okay. I am working on it. But, man, I mean,
I didn't gain a pound.
You're an a-hole. you're a bastard. You texted me that last night. And I hate you because.
You texted him that?
He did. He was rubbing in. But, and you know what? Good for him. Like, I mean, I saw this guy, like, running every day. And then we pound burgers and beers at night. And I'm looking at him like, where's the fat? There's no fat on this kid. And so
because you make little changes with our friends at Awaken 180, and in the long run, it smooths everything out, baby. Yep. And that's where I'm living. But enough of that. It's 3 o'clock. Ted's here. Fitzy's here. Hart's here. Time for the 3-point stand.
319.
118.
118.
Yeah, there you go.
What's that?
It's the 3-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three. Bang!
Easy as 1, 2, 3.
Pasternak! A hat trick and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone! A 3-run homer and the game is tied.
On WEEI Afternoons.
All right, gentlemen. It is time for today's 3-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons. And today's 3-point stance is brought to you, as always, by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, or you keep antagonizing Ted about his weight, you got to get Glassman. Call all 7-617-777-7777. As it is 3 o'clock and we have three hosts here on WEEI Afternoons, each will present their stance on the biggest stories in the world of sports and sometimes beyond. Each host will have 60 seconds or thereabouts to present their opening stance on their story of the day. And then, once every host is gone, we'll open it up for discussion on the floor. Our order is Andy Hart, then Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and then Ted Johnson. Andy Hart, you will lead us off. Are you ready, my friend?
I am indeed.
Okay, well then your 60 seconds. Hey, they begin right now.
So there's been an unfair comparison made that I kind of aligned myself to fluff up Will Campbell, and that was the last time the Patriots took an offensive lineman fourth overall. It was John Hanna. That's not fair. He was considered the greatest guard ever. He's a Hall of Fame style player. So I keep trying to think of, like, what would a comp be in the Belichick era, the modern era? And the name I landed on, different position, but the name I landed on was Ty Warren in 2003. He was drafted 13th overall, so top half of the first round, high pick. They actually traded up one pick to get him. He was the fifth defensive tackle drafted in the 13 picks of the first round. Why? Because the Patriots needed a defensive end in the 3-4 scheme, but a D-tackle type, big body. You know what he came in and did? His job. He filled the hole, the massive gap in front of the guys like Ted Johnson and Mike Vrabel. He filled a massive need. He went on to be a one-time PFWA All-Pro. He started 92 of 105 games for the New England Patriots. Was he great? No. But he was a good, solid pro who made the front of that defense better and filled a massive hole. He was a need pick. He might have been a reach pick at that point in the draft, but they had to get him. They got him, and he had a great, successful career for your New England Patriots. If Will Campbell can be Ty Warren at left tackle, you're going to be all right. Teddy's nodding, but I don't know if that's good or bad. We'll find out more later.
There you go. He's understood the assignment, and it's not necessarily best player available. It's best to them. That's something Phil Perry said that I really like to describe where we're at right now and where they were at that point. So well put by Andy Hart. We move along to Nick Fitzy-Stevens. Fitzy, are you ready, my friend?
I am indeed, even though my computer has frozen with the assets I needed for my 3-point stance. I feel confident in my position that I can just riff and vamp a good minute away.
F it. Do it live.
There you go. Well, your 60 seconds to riff as well as vamp begin right now.
All right, so now that everybody has placed their grades on the 2025 NFL Draft, we're getting all sorts of reconfigured lists of every football kind, including favorite picks by round, and of course, new power rankings 4 months out from the actual kickoff of the 2025 season as to which teams were helped and hurt most by the draft. And at NFL.com, Eric Edholm, who does a fine job, has power ranked all 32 teams after free agency and the 2025 draft. And where do you find your 2025 New England Patriots? Ranked 2000 and, that's right, 25th. Drake May must have loved watching it play out. They brought in Will Campbell, Travion Henderson, Kyle Williams, Jared Wilson, big splashes in free agency and more. 25th? Are you freaking kidding me? That is a team that doesn't even come close to sniffing the playoffs in 2025. Playoffs? That's right. I'm daring to talk playoffs. This team, with the additions that they have made in free agency and the A-plus draft that they just had, with all apologies to other radio stations in and around the town and across the street, are you nuts? Are you freaking kidding me? 25th overall? This team is going to finish in the top half of the NFL, and I'm with Mina Kimes and Kay Adams. They're going to make the playoffs this fall. Book it.
Three, that's like the Golden Girls, three ladies that stick together.
Those girls are
And
big.
You know what, Andy? If I threw a party, you would see the biggest gift from me, and the card attached would say, go F yourself.
I'm not talking about this.
Yeah, sorry, Jordan. All right, Ted Johnson.
I'm ready, bub.
Are you ready?
I'm still bub.
I have no idea where you're going with this, which is my favorite. Yes, beautiful. Then let's get right into it.
No worries. Just steer into it, buddy.
All right, you ready? Here we go. One, two, three. All right, I'm going to start my 3-point stance with a question to everybody.
Oh,
you guys, if I ask you the question, what do you think? I think of Deion Sanders coaching my alma mater.
I think you don't like it anymore, and it's become embarrassing to the school and its rich history.
Okay, that's fair. I don't know if I ever really liked it, so I would say I've always been hesitant about that hire. I've always been reluctant for that hire because I hold college coaches to a higher standard than I do NFL coaches. When it comes to morally, they are supposed to be leaders of men, set a good example, that kind of thing. So that leads me to what's going on at UNC with Bill Belichick. And I think, and I'm surprised that UNC never called Atlanta on why they passed on Bill Belichick and hiring Atlanta. My feeling is that the Atlanta Falcons are kind of looking at the UNC going, you should have called us. You know, you should have called us. And I say all that to say this, that I think the UNC Carolina Tar Heels should consider firing Bill Belichick. That they should consider letting him go at this point. It's a lot of money, and they're deep into, obviously, their preparation for next year. But I look at Bill Belichick, and I wonder if he's fit to coach an NFL team, let alone fit to coach a college team, which, again, I put more onus on the character and personality and just overall a character, if you will, of a college coach than I do a pro coach. And so I'm worried that Bill Belichick just isn't fit to coach college kids, and UNC should consider cutting ties with Bill Belichick.
Okay. I'm a man. I'm 72. Come after me.
He just did, coach. So Dan Ball, not to step on your toes here, is the conductor.
That's a day that ends in Y. Go ahead.
But I joked with Jones and Keefe in the crossover about Ted Johnson, Bill Belichick. This is a high-profile topic. We all know certain people think you feel a certain way about Bill, preconceived bias, whatever.
No, there's no preconceived.
No, I know. Yeah. I know, because I know you and I know the situation. But I joked like, is this the day where Ted goes viral with a clip on social media? I think there's a chance that clip right there, Ted calling for Bill Belichick to be removed at North Carolina. So can I ask you a quick question about yours? I find this fascinating.
By all means.
Who was your head coach?
Bill McCarney.
And didn't he do like a traveling thing, teaching men to be men?
Promise keepers.
Yes.
Correct.
So like, I just want people to know that that's where you come from, the guy that raised you
a phenomenal coach.
As a college football
that's
player.
That's right. He wasn't perfect, but he was pretty damn close to perfect and really just a leader of men, set an example in something that we were very proud to have. You know, the university was proud to have Bill McCarney. He's the most, storied coach of all time for that university.
So literally.
And even my position coach, I absolutely love and just would do anything for Brian Cabral, my position coach, as well as my head coach, who just has since passed a couple months ago.
But McCartney was literally a leader of men
Correct.
And a molder of boys.
That's
like,
it.
And can you expand on, because I don't know a ton about what he did, but I know he went like filled football stadiums with men looking to be better men.
You know, he's a man of faith, a man of God. And so that was the foundation and the principle of Promise Keepers. It was basically trying to teach men to be better men,
mm-hmm.
you know. And he just felt like there was it was being lost on what was important and what the roles were for a man in a family, in a relationship, or in just whatever, in the world. And so he had these big events that filled stadiums for years
mm-hmm.
Where he Coach Bill McCartney was one of the most phenomenal motivational speakers you'll ever listen to. I mean, ever. And so besides being a very successful head coach at Colorado, he also had Promise Keepers. It was very, very successful for a long time.
Yeah, see, I feel like once you get to the professional level, Ted, at that point now, it's not your positional coach's job. It's not your head coach's job, your GM's, anyone's job. You're not a fully formed man. You know, the mind still is not even close to done evolving. You should always be trying to learn something new. You should be trying to find ways to better yourself each and every day that you're alive, let alone during your playing career. But I feel like a college football coach, at least it should have been, the last stop on the way to maturation, improvement, and evolution. And, you know, if you're telling me that this guy was so influential in your life and in the lives of others as well, as I believe every coach should try to be on the amateur, although I know it's not amateur anymore, at least we grew up to think it to be, on the amateur or semi-professional level, you know, that's a coach's responsibility. When you coach anybody, whether it's a little league team, a flag football team, a college football team, lacrosse, your job is to not only get that team to win, but to try to improve the lives of these young men and women. And if Bill Belichick is now just out the lamb, just doing all this crazy blank, I just wonder how anyone at North Carolina, aside from their zest for winning and getting lots of clicks and headlines and viewership this fall, if it's going to continue like this, how can they say he's setting a very bad example.
Well,
right now.
What is he not like so far? There's one quantifiable kind of thing you can see what the impact is of Bill Belichick, and that is the ratings for the rankings for his class, his recruiting class. It was actually a lot worse this year than last year's class, which to me is an indicator. And then I just think you hold. You know, these big institutions are proud institutions, and it reflects on the institution when you hire coaches that aren't reflecting, you know, the values of what you're all about. And I just don't think Bill is doing that right now. And so if I'm UNC, I've heard all of you guys say on the ride in, and it was fun to listen to you guys, this is going to get worse before it gets better.
Yes.
So with that in mind, don't you think it's better to cut loose now than to see this thing through and wait? And again, I've always said this about Bill. Okay, Bill Belichick never really has cared about his players, like genuinely cared. Like Bill Parcells genuinely cared about his players. Case in point, he's given millions of his own money to help players that have had problems post football. Bill Belichick would never do that. Never even consider doing that. And so, at the college level, you really need coaches that care about players and them as human beings and them as men. And Bill Belichick has never cared about his players. And so it's just not a good fit considering what I'm seeing going on right now from Bill.
So let me play.
I got to push back against that just a little bit, Ted. I mean, I understand that there was your engagement with him was very different from a lot of other people's, or maybe it was more similar than we as Pats fans or general consumers of the product understand. And there is a disposable warrior nature, or so it sadly seems, to professional football players in the 21st century NFL. But do you really think there's no way, no chance that Bill Belichick evolved and never learned to really care about any of the guys on this team? Or has he just been that self-centered his whole life? I just have a hard time believing that. As out there as he's behaving right now, as off the grid as some of his behavior may seem to many people, I can't believe that he doesn't care about anybody
else but
himself.
He cares about the players that have, you know, LT, right? They have raised his profile, that have made him look good. Tom Brady to some degree, you know? But no, the majority of his players, I mean, he never once did have I known anybody to ever know him to care about, you know, the families. Have you ever heard him congratulate somebody about their with their baby like Vrabel does? Or I've never heard him do that stuff. And so, no, I mean, and look, you can still, you know, he proved it. You can still be a phenomenal coach without that. But it just at the college level, you need coaches that genuinely care about their players and have an emotional attachment to some degree, I think, to their players. And that's just not how Bill's wired.
So let me play devil's advocate here a little bit, because I would ask from the let's stick to North Carolina, because you believe they should consider moving on from him at a late point in the process. This would be a massive story because we are coming up on the month of May. They're going to start summer practices and the season starts in late August. This would be a really late change. What is the fireable offense that he's done? Like, what is the specific thing to North Carolina that you say they should move on from him?
I just think just the what you've seen so far, the behaviors with Jordan, and which that dynamic, her being on the football field, her kind of just, I think, embarrassing Bill. And then Bill, you know, people want to go, well, she's taking control of Bill. You think Bill doesn't have any say in how these things go? Of course he does. He's okay with what she's doing. He's okay with her. You don't think he knows that email was being posted on her Instagram? Of course he knows. He's signing off on that. And so to me, those are bad decisions that makes him and the university look really bad and question whether or not he is of sound mind and should be running a football team at University of North Carolina. I think it's just something you have to really, really consider. Just question the decision-making from the head coach at this point for those reasons.
Dan Ball.
Hi.
This is usually your segment. I didn't want to step on your toes again.
After just saying that you stepped on my toes, I figured there was going to be more on that. So let me pose a question, because I want to stick on this because we have a couple more minutes before we move on. And we'll revisit this later on in the show because we're waiting for a statement of some kind.
She promised it. Where is it?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe she's waiting for
some former high-profile, you know, Bobby Petrino had an incident. You know, and although she's not a student, she's as old as a grad student, right? And so I think you just have to be very, very careful.
But it's a consensual relationship,
If you're UNC.
Okay, so can I make the divide?
That doesn't matter. It's all about perception, you know, Fitzy. It's like, yeah, it's fine. They're consenting adults, but that the perception is not reality, maybe, okay, right? So there's going to be a lot of people that are going to, even though it's consensual, there's a lot of people that don't think this is a good look.
A company can fire you, too, if I forget the name of the clause. I've been trying to find it.
Oh, like a morals clause?
A morals, exactly. Yeah. Thank you, Andy.
Santa? Yeah.
If it feels like it's you're making the company look bad, for sure.
Yes, and I did want to differentiate, because I think there's two issues here. There's what people feel about his personal relationship, two consenting adults, even if it's a 50, and she's a part of the program. He brought her into the program.
She is the program.
Right.
In a way, she is the program. Everything is funneled through her. So that, to me, is more...
You're making the case for me.
Fireable is more problematic. That's almost like if he brought in his kid. Well, that example, because he did bring in his kid to run the defense. But he just brought in this person who, on the surface, if you work at North Carolina football, you don't look at her and say, oh, yeah, I see why she's here. She's you know, got experience. Yeah. She's done this in other places. Oh, no, that's Bill's girlfriend, and she's in charge of what? Why are we allowing her to do X, Y, and Z?
And I know this is a thing that you didn't think was a big deal, Stiz, but just the what the optics of her dressed the way she was dressed, and she was not dressed appropriately to be on the football field. I'm just saying. And the stands, fine. But walking onto the field, the way she was dressed to help Bill with his headset and to help him get situated for practice so that he was comfortable, that is not an appropriate look. That is not a good look.
I think that's where you kind of start to lose me a little bit. She's a woman. She's a young 24-year-old woman. It didn't look too crazy to me.
I've been on a lot of football fields, and I've never seen anything like that.
That's also drastically different. It's also 2025.
Like I've also been around a lot of women working in sports who
would never dress like that.
And they have to think about their attire more than they probably should, because they already feel like they're swimming upstream in a men's world and they want to be taken seriously. Yeah. I've been around women reporters, I won't name names, that were very critical of other female reporters because you're making us look bad with the way you're dressing. So when you're in the world of football,
concur, Andy,
which is a men's world, Should they have to think of that? I don't know. That's a different discussion for a different day, but a lot of them do think of that because they want to be taken seriously. They want to be making moves up the ladder based on their merits, not what they're wearing, what they look like. And that goes for trainers, reporters, coaches. There's a lot of coaches now in the NFL, female coach. Like, so that is a factor in this. I don't discount what Ted is saying. Whether it's right or wrong, that's not for us to decide.
It's just part of the story.
Absolutely. And this story won't go away. We're waiting for the live announcement, whatever the statement that's going to be from Jordan on her social media. She's going to put out an official statement.
Today?
Or at least, well, that's what she said.
Okay.
But that was like a couple hours ago, and we're still waiting. So we will monitor her social media channels for whatever the statement may be, and we'll Dan Ball says there is nothing yet, so
he's not on Instagram.
Not on Instagram. We'll continue to monitor all of that. We'll continue to talk about this, but we do need to sprinkle in, and I want to touch on it next. It is a big day in Boston sports. You got Garrett Crochet taking the mound for the Red Sox. He needs to be better. He needs to win a game. He has started to trend in the wrong direction. And the Boston Celtics play at 8:40. They're gonna make me stay up late to watch them end this series with the Magic. We'll get Ted's thoughts on Crochet Day and the Magic Celtics next on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball will give us everything that's trending except the statement from Jordan.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
That was Joe Mazzulla, who we can get into this another day, another time, but I like more and more. He has grown more and more on me.
Yeah.
I really am enjoying him coaching, talking, leading, pushing buttons that we've talked about with players.
When they're winning.
He's different. Yeah.
No, not even that. Like, I guess that. You're right. If they were down 1-3 to the Magic, would I be like, Joe Mazzulla, I really love what he's doing.
If they were 37-45 and missed the playoffs, we still wouldn't be circulating Mazzulla-isms.
Right. But I appreciate and I guess we're talking about it now here on WEEI Afternoons. I appreciate the way he embraces Celtics, the lore, the legend, the history, the pressures, but the opportunities. Like, I think that's cool. Like,
well, I think
all of that.
And also, I would back you in that if the players like him, that's always okay. What am I missing? If I don't like him, what is it? Because the players resonate with him. The players like him.
And
so I need to start seeing what the players see in him.
And I kind of didn't like him his first year, and he has grown on me, so maybe there is some of that, too, because they were loyal to him. They did like him, especially Tatum, and so now he's grown on me. Two for Tuesday here on WEEI Afternoons. That means if you were listening this morning, I have a question for you. Be caller number 9 now to the contest line at 617-931-0937, and if you have today's code word, which was given out on the Greg Hill Show, 7 o'clock this morning, you'll score a pair of tickets to see the Red Sox take on the Rangers on May 7th. That's two tickets. Tickets to see Sox Rangers May 7th, Fenway Park, 617-931-0937 with today's code word. And before we get to the Celtics and their big game tonight, I do want to get back to the phone lines. Tony from Bridgewater has been hanging on for a while here to talk about Bill Belichick. Tony, what was your reaction to what's going on with Bill Belichick?
I've always stuck up for Bill because I just, you know, like him as a coach, but he's lost his cookies. And, this guy, the only thing he's guilty of, to be honest with you, and I don't know, maybe her Tortellini winks, but he's just whipped. And he seems like he's lost in a cocoon or something like that. You know, I think he's lost his mind a little bit.
All right, thanks for the call, Tony.
Can I put it a certain way for people?
Sure.
What's going on here, maybe the dynamics?
Okay.
Bill isn't that different than, you know how many players struggle once they're done with football? Post-career, they just... The real world is intimidating. It's scary. They lack self awareness. They're used to the football culture and community is so vastly different from anything else. And once you are out of that, even though he's at UNC, I mean he's been out of pro football for a year and a half, but he's had to transition into this kind of real world thing, and he doesn't know what he's doing. He's like the rest of us that retire and go, holy crap, how does this all work? What, I got bills to pay? And he needs help. He's got to have someone with him to help to pay the bills, probably, to help with just things, what I call RPTs, regular people things, that I struggled with. He probably struggled with the same. So he's so needy of someone like a Jordan that he empowers that person hugely. If they're going to show some loyalty to him, and they're going to help him kind of coordinate his life, then he's going to show loyalty to them. And so I think that's a similar dynamic, is that he's kind of lost like the rest of us when we retire from the sport after that we've been in for so long.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. And obviously you speak from experience, and we've heard all kinds of stories of players. And I would ask you a question from your experiences, from your teammates' experiences, guys you've seen. If you put your trust in the wrong person post-career or people, advisors, don't you often end up in trouble,
in a
bad place financially or career-wise, whatever?
Yeah.
And maybe that's what he's doing. Because I do think you're right. He's at North Carolina, but he's not in professional football. He's in a totally different world than where he is the man, familiar with the structure, the whole thing. And that's an interesting point that you bring up there. And I do wonder if he's got the wrong person that he's put his faith in for whatever reason. I thought you were going down a totally different road when you said Bill's not a lot different than a lot of us men. I thought you were going...
I've heard a lot of people say Little Bill is doing the thinking for Big Bill kind of thing.
That's true, too.
Well, there's some truth to that. But it's just once you decompressing from the game of football into the real world and transitioning is a struggle for so many players. And the longer you play, I think the harder it is to transition.
Yeah.
And so Bill's been coaching his whole life, and so you're seeing maybe some of the results of him being in this cocoon for so long. Now that he's out of it, you know, it's scary to him a little bit, and he just doesn't know how to handle it.
Well, what if let's say, you know, Bill's just a dude who's, you know, trying to feel like he's living forever, wants to be younger. The young lady who's a tad opportunistic finds her way, you know, winnows her way into his life.
Which that I is just, very diplomatic.
I'm trying to set it up diplomatically for a second. And then he doesn't realize just what a borderline parasitic she can be.
Is that a possibility,
Ted? It starts with a little, I won't benevolence, but like it doesn't begin just, with nefarious intent, and then it gets out of control.
I just think that lets Bill off the hook a little bit to some degree. Like he doesn't know what he's doing completely. I think they're of like minds. I think they've been together for 4 years now, like longer than what people think. And so I don't know. I mean, I might have said that. You might have maybe made that argument a year into the relationship, but 2 years. He put her name and thanked her in his book. I mean, this is a relationship that has been solid for several years now. So it's just letting him off the hook, I think, a little bit, Fitzy, if you put it that way.
Gotcha. We'll be continuing to talk about Bill Belichick. We're awaiting Jordan's statement. Some people were trying to tell me on the text line, Dan Ball, that the statement was the reposting of the book with his autograph, but that's not a statement. She said full statement coming.
She put out the email and then said full statement released later today.
Okay, so I'm awaiting a full statement. Their comments on this, hers, his, Bill's, whatever. Anyway.
That's my understanding, but I'm also not on her email list, so I don't know.
That's true. Berges. Maybe Berges will be listening.
And so is Richard at inkwellmanagement.com.
Yes, I noticed that. He was the only one that got outed. Everybody else, it's like Berges.
He's probably thrilled now that everybody has his email address. Yeah,
he called IT. He's already changed his email address,
I would think so, man.
You've already requested an interview with him and Jordan.
Did you, by the way, have you sent out an interview request? We got to get Bill on. He's promoting a book. What are we doing?
Gee, do you think we know anybody who knows Bill?
You know what? If I had his number, I would.
You don't have his number?
I don't have his number.
Really?
No. Why would I have Bill Belichick's phone number?
I would have thought you did.
I've been out of the game 18 years.
Yeah, but most people don't change their cell phone number once they have it.
I mean, let me see.
He's got burner on top of burner.
Let's call him live on air if he
does. Let me see if I have. I'm curious. Do I have Bill?
Let's FaceTime him.
Belichick.
That's what you do when you're really being aggressive.
I have Bill Parcells. No, not Bill Belichick.
You don't have Bill Belichick's number. So you played for him for six years.
Maybe he didn't have a cell phone back then, Andy.
He had it was Nextels back then, and he's since, you know, Andrew had to switch over from the Nextel. All right, well, we'll effort to get Bill Belichick on. We'll see how that goes. Dan Ball, that's on you. Celtics tonight will play the Orlando Magic.
Can't wait.
Up 3-1. 8:40 tip-off, so we're all going to have to... Well, you guys always stay up late. I'm going to have to stay up a little later. My guy Dan Ball tells me that Jason Tatum is really good. So obviously the other day, 37 points, 14 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals. Was one of the more remarkable games in postseason history. The only other people, Fitzy, that had games like that are called Jordan, LeBron, Kareem, Duncan, Magic, Barkley, Olajuwon, Durant, and Jokic. He added his name to that list. Pretty good list. And Dan Ball tells me that in the 2020s, you know who's first in wins in the postseason?
That would be Jason Tatum.
You know who's first in points?
That would be Jason Tatum.
You know who's first in threes?
That would be Jason Tatum.
Yeah, you sense a trend here. He's also second in rebounds and assists, third in steals, fourth in blocks. He's been tremendous.
Dude, he's played in over 100 playoff games in his career.
The both of them have. I know.
A season and a half of NBA action in just postseason.
118 or 119, 120 playoff
games. It's not Brady-esque yet, Andy, but like where Tom Brady basically played three extra full seasons of football, but like... Well, it's wild.
It's a season and a third that they're on right now, or whatever
and
it is.
And he might have another eight quality years or more if he takes care of himself like Durant has. Like, there could be another decade of Jason Tatum level dominance to come in the postseason.
So Ted, Fitzy, and I think feel like they're going to close this out. I've been a little optimistic. Not only do I think they're going to close it out, I think this series is going to help them sweep the Knicks. I may be getting a little ahead of myself. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling heading into tonight's game five? The way they've handled themselves, the physicality, the style, everything that's going on.
Yeah, it's been fun to listen to you guys yesterday because I think you both have kind of differing opinions. You, I think, if correct me if I'm wrong, you feel. Andy, that you like that they're being tested early.
Yes.
Where Fitzy, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like you're like, hey, they're getting beat down. This is going to maybe affect them later. Is that fair to say?
I have a concern that they may get ground down a little bit, or rather that some of the injuries could pile up. Like, you know, Drew Holiday's now about to miss his third consecutive game, Ted. You don't want Tatum to re-injure the wrist. You don't want Jaylen Brown to re-injure the knee. But as far as playing style and, temerity and tenacity go, like, I think this is battle testing them in the right ways.
Yeah, I do, too. I think this is a good thing. And so I'm looking forward to tonight. I do think they close it out tonight. I just, the Celtics from, say, 2 years ago would lose this game. And then they'd have to go back to Orlando and then win in six, right? Last year they won in five. Last year in the first round, they won in five. And then the next round, they won in five. And then the next round, they won in four. Like, they didn't have – it never got to the sixth game, ever, right? And so don't let it get to a sixth game. Look, I don't mind a physical – I love a physical first round kind of matchup because I think the Knicks are going to be more physical than people think. You saw what Cleveland did to Miami. They're going to be ready for you, and OKC is going to be physical. So it is a great test, but just finish them in five. And I don't mind. I don't mind the hard kind of style of basketball that we're seeing. They do push it. There's no question, but they're not backing down. I've seen in the past kind of Tatum back down a little bit from that. I see him kind of pumping out of his chest. It's like I think winning last year has given Tatum a different vibe for me. I look at him so different. I think he carries himself differently. I don't think people look at him like he's a punk like they may be used to. He's fighting back, and to me, I love it. And so I think this series has been great for Tatum. I don't like – you mentioned Drew Holiday being injured. I'll say this. If Drew Holiday is injured or, God forbid, a Derek White, I think they're in trouble. I don't like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown being as dominant with the ball as they are. I think you play the more you go down these playoffs – the more you need Drew Holiday and Derek White, I think, to handle the ball more. That's what makes me a little bit nervous. So I don't want those two guys in particular to get injured.
I agree because I think Peyton Pritchard has
a little overwhelmed, knocked around,
hasn't played his best against the Magic, which is a team that's given the Celtics problems, so maybe that's just a one-off with this series. If you want to react to the Celtics, Game 5 tonight in Boston, 8:40 tip. Do you think they're going to close it out? Are you worried about the physicality? I do know that the Magic are not going to lay down like the Heat did last night. That was one of the most embarrassing performances I've ever seen in professional sports. We're also going to talk Garrett Crochet. Ted's going to yell at me because he thinks I'm putting too much expectation on the plate of the ace here in Boston. I want an ace-like performance against the Blue Jays tonight. Talking Red Sox up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
WEEI Afternoons, Andy Hart, Ted Johnson, Nick Fitzy Stevens. Red Sox in Toronto tonight to take on the Blue Jays, who had a lot of success against them here at Fenway Park earlier in the season.
Boy, did they.
Coming off an off day, you have Garrett Crochet on the mound, and Garrett Crochet coming off not a great performance while we were in Green Bay. He was a little walky, ballsy with his pitches.
Walky, ballsy is exactly how the pitching scientist described.
Andrew Bailey.
It was a little walky, ballsy. But don't forget, As we learned from our good pal Joe Weil on the MassMutual Red Sox pregame show, Andy, it wasn't just the last start. There were some signs of, warning signs ish on the start before, because he had more 2-0 counts than strikeouts in his previous start. So, like, there was a little bit of a pitch tip, if you will, that maybe the check engine light was coming on for some reason.
Ted, you want to address that? Because I said he was trending in the wrong direction, and you kind of gave me a look.
I did. And then, I've been in Green Bay for a few days, so I'm kind of all out of whack. But you're right. You reminded me.
Classic cheese curd syndrome.
Yeah. Look, yeah. So he has been struggling to find his spots, right? He's been a little bit loosey-goosey. So, do I lose faith? No. What I like about him, he's the mental makeup of an ace isn't just that, they throw a lot of strikes and they are the best pitchers on your baseball team. They are also tough ass competitors.
Yeah.
More times than not, they just don't back down. They're tough. They grind, and he strikes me as a guy that isn't going to be satisfied unless he's throwing gas and he's hitting his spots and he's winning games for his baseball team. And so I don't worry about it because I just like the mental makeup of what I've seen so far out of Garrett Crochet, which, look, if that would concern, if he's not pitching well and his mental makeup is weak or isn't something where I feel like, okay, this guy doesn't have the self-confidence. But, no, he does. And so I'm okay. He's fine. They're good.
So along those lines, in four appearances, two starts against Toronto, Crochet is 2-1 with a .66 ERA in 13 and two-thirds innings. You know when that loss was? April 8th, 21 days ago.
Please.
So he lost to the Blue Jays when he gave up, I think, four runs, only one earned, and five hits. But if he is what you are talking about, the dog, the competitor, he remembers that because it was a short time ago and probably wants to prove something against a good lineup, right? That's a good lineup that did a better job against them than they probably expected early in the season. And now you have a little counterpunch, redemption time a couple weeks later. Look, so step to the plate or the mound.
Garrett's the kind of guy you just get the sense. Like, they gave him a deal when maybe a lot of teams wouldn't. He certainly has a track record, right? I mean, he just has no
never
track.
Thrown a complete game in his life, and he just got $200 million.
It's like, He is going to give you everything he's got. He's going to want to prove to all the fans and to the Red Sox that he is worth the investment that they made in him.
And I would like to also add, Andy, that Garrett Crochet was recently talking about the possibility of being discussed as a starter for Team USA for the upcoming World Baseball Classic in the spring of 2026. Hadn't been asked yet, said he would take great pride in that as well. And I feel like the combination of, I feel like I just let my team down, swelling with pride that I'm being mentioned as one of the best starters for America right now. I wouldn't be surprised if he crosses the border and pitches his ass off tonight.
Yeah, and Ted said it, like, I expect most nights that's the result. Like, that's the level he's on, is that you're that contract, his stuff, his ability, that's what you're expecting. It's like Jason Tatum. When Jason Tatum doesn't score 28-plus, you're like, whoa, 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 what's going on here, right? Like, once you reach that certain level of success and expectation, we're greedy. We want it every night. Do it again. Do it again. Do it again. And for an ace, it's every 5 days, and this is his opportunity. Also a little nugget out of Red Sox Nation, ball notes or whatever we want to call them. Did you know who the International League Player of the Week was, Fitzy?
I'm going to guess Roman Anthony.
I am going to say you're wrong, because it's Marcelo Meyer was the International League Player of the Week. Went 9-for-20 with 3 doubles, 3 home runs, 12 RBI, 3 walks in 6 games.
How are you going to keep that? How are you going to validate and justify keeping that guy in Worcester that much longer if he's raking like that?
It gets more difficult. Now, it gets easier when Christian Campbell is awesome and Trevor Story is really good.
Nature.
Yeah. So, if he played first base, he'd be up already. But I don't want him to play first base. Just to clarify for anybody listening, I'm not saying give him a first baseman's mitt and teach. No. He is a shortstop. He's a middle infielder. He might be a third baseman. If any of those positions become available, come on up.
Plus, he'd get in the way of Roman Anthony playing first base.
Well, we got that, too. Or Vaughn Grissom or any of these other guys that they're teaching first base on the fly because Tristan Casas stinks.
Can he catch?
Wait a minute. Hasn't Alex Cora have kind of put that to bed?
Which one?
Just the Von Grissom or the Roman Anthony playing first.
I thought
he slammed that pretty hard.
He's put a lot of things to bed that I don't know are always to bed. Like he put the on our show. And speaking of Alex Cora, we'll talk to him 2:30 on Wednesday. He put to bed on our show Rafi Devers ever playing first base, and yet Rafi Devers takes ground balls. And well, why is he taking ground balls? Emergency?
If Alex tells WEI Afternoons something, I'm holding him to it.
He's a smart guy, though. He knows conditions can change.
But back to the Marcelo Meyer, it is like, where do you put the kid? Like
Worcester,
honestly,
till he's ready. Worcester, like, let him build confidence, continue to rake.
Fitzy's saying he needs to come up right now.
No, I don't need him up right now.
Okay.
When I need him, I'll bring him up.
What lineup in America, Canada, or the world can't use Marcelo Meyer or Roman Anthony right now? Barrel rates, what's that? Who's?
Boston.
Where would you put him, Fitzy? Who do you demote? That's the question.
So we'll answer that question on the other side. Where do you put Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer? We'll continue to talk about the Celtics. I'm sure we're going to get back to Bill Belichick. We also need to get to the NFL draft because we are still basking in the glory, at least some of us, of this draft. The Patriots put out a great 7-minute video of Will Campbell's first day in New England. We got some more sound bites about what he'll do when he's cold. And just going to let you know, he'll sound a lot like Forrest Gump when he answers that question. That's all next here on WEEI Afternoons.